You are listening to the Apria Leadership Podcast Series with Mark Cooper, recorded during the Apria Asia Pacific Property Leader Summit in Shanghai, in conversation with Mike Holland, CEO, Embassy Office Parks.
This is the Apria Leadership Podcast with Mark Cooper. I'm here today with Mike Holland, Chief Executive of Embassy Office Parks REIT. Welcome, Mike. He must be the most experienced expat working in Indian real estate at the moment. Tell us a little bit about what took you there and how your career has progressed.
Yes, well, thanks, Mark. I've been very fortunate, actually, to spend about 17 of the last 20 years in India. I came out to Asia from London in 95, started in Singapore. I was working in a development management team in London. And I moved from London with JLL to Singapore. And a couple of years later, before India had really taken off in terms of globalization and joining the global market, I moved to India to set up the what was the JLW business, then became the JLL business. Yep. So that was 20 years ago. And what was meant to be a 3 to 5 year stint, as often is the case, turns out that further opportunities came my way, market expanded. I've been doing commercial real estate in India since then. Spent a couple of years in Chicago in the interim, but broadly speaking in Asia since 95. And of course, India's transformed since 98, when it was really that a company like JLL was looking for international mandates from its corporate occupiers. And they were saying, if you want regional business, you have to be in India. It wasn't that India was seen as a great investor market, as a great market for developers. And of course, that's completely transformed in the last two decades. So I've been very fortunate to be part of that.
What was it like on the ground in India in those the first years when you joined? And how tough was it setting up that JLW business?
Yeah, well, for a young guy, so to speak, fresh off the boat in Asia, at a time when Asia was really emerging, it was very exciting, but it was extremely challenging. Certainly, one thing that is completely different today in comparison with 20 years ago is the scale of the market and businesses that are there in the major metros in India. Of course, it was only just at the beginning of the internet age, and so information was quite scarce. To try to ascertain market data, it was a completely different proposition. Much more word of mouth, much more primary research, much smaller scale requirements. So corporate occupiers in those days, a requirement of 1,000 square meters would have been considered significant. Today, it's not uncommon to do deals built to suits that would be 100 times that scale. So, and of course, there were very few international companies there, only the major leaders. In the technology space, certainly in those days, Texas Instruments was one of the first operators out there. Today, I mean, we have over 170 corporate tenants who would be half of them a Fortune 500 type of company. So it's a completely different proposition, and transparency is different. The legal framework is different. And the experience is very different. People have been working in that industry now for a couple of decades, and so there's great local experience.
So it has the market has a history now.
It has a history. It has a track record. I think, as with many markets, the mid 2000s saw a boom. A number of international investors, not just in the Indian market, but regionally, had a torrid time post 2007. But India particularly was one of those markets, as you see it across Asia. When a market opens up and emerges, there tends to be a stampede of fresh capital into those markets, the excitement of markets opening up. And then there's often a correction comes from that. You know, I'm fortunate to have worked in the US, in Europe, here in Asia over my career. And frankly, you get to see the cycles and you get to see and experience those ups and downs in the market. And that's the gray hair, I guess, of people who've been in these emerging markets for some time. And that's got to be useful for us and for investors.
Yes, there's also been, as well as the movement through cycles, there's been structural change in the market and a lot of new legislation about real estate. And also legislation that doesn't directly apply to real estate, but has been beneficial. What have been the most significant changes, do you think?
Yeah, so clearly in the early mid-2000s, when foreign direct investment was permitted into Indian real estate, that was perhaps the single largest impactful legislation around real estate. And that was part of what I sometimes call the perfect storm that happened in the early 2000s, where that stoked demand. So there were three key pieces of legislation. One was that foreign direct investment was permitted. So not into pure land, but with restrictions. So a wave of capital came with that. There was the creation of the SEZ Act, which gave tax incentives to large scale developments, particularly in the commercial and industrial space. Again, that stoked demand. And the third major change, which wasn't a legislative change, but was more of a market change, was globalization and the way in which we're now able to transact business at a global level. So those three aspects came together, pushed demand, and you know, we know the story in the 2007-08, and of course that supply overhang that came from the early 2000s took a few years to work through. Other recent legislation in India, of course, was the advent of REIT legislation.
Of course.
Second time round, I think, was in 2013, and as you know, we created the first REIT in India. There's been a number of regulatory changes that are particularly impactful to the residential sector, which will have a long, in the midterm, will have a positive impact, although there is some pain arising as a result under what's called RERA, real estate regulation. There has been a tightening up of insolvency provisions. So again, short-term pain, but actually part of the continuing evolution from an undeveloped, fragmented real estate market into something that is more akin to what we see in the more developed markets of Asia. So consistent, solid change and evolution from a market which was really disconnected from the global market into something that is meaningful with international both investors and occupiers. Big change, but you know, over 20 years.
That the global investment piece has been really important to India, and obviously was the part of the precursor to the Embassy Office Parks REIT. So we had people like Blackstone, Allianz, Brookfield investing substantial capital. And was it the combination of India's demographics and legislative change that drew them there? What's the attractors for an international investor to bring them to India?
Yeah, so it's the clear demand side fundamentals, actually. So, you know, I focus entirely on the office sector. That is driven by the demand for the talent that's available in India at scale. So what was maybe a decade ago primarily thought of as a low-cost offshoring type of location, so that generates demand for sure, that has transitioned and morphed into a higher level of sophistication of technology-related services, but in multiple different sectors. So at a time globally when we have really a shortage in the West of science, technology, engineering type of talent, India is in the fortunate position that it's able to provide that sort of talent at a scale that frankly is unachievable in Western Europe or in the US. So when we have all-time, despite all the negative sentiment that seems to be around, particularly at the moment, we've got all-time highs in terms of employment in those major Western markets. So demand side for services is there. The people simply aren't available in the West, and that's driven high quality companies, high quality services. So it's that demand for the type of real estate that we deliver that draws the investor in. And I think some of those investors that you mentioned had good foresight, that they looked ahead. They came into the market, and again, it's an indicator over many years that the best players perhaps are a little contracyclical, but they're looking at those markets exactly at the time that everyone's running for the doors. I think it's well known Blackstone set up shop in India around about 2007, which would have been right at the time that the rest of the market was looking elsewhere. Some of the people had come in the 2003 to 2006 period. If you were in very early, then people would have got a good result. But if you came in at the midpoint or tail end of that cycle, a lot of people felt a lot of pain. Blackstone came in 2007. They sat on their hands for a few years and looked around. I think very important in Asia, and India certainly reflects this, is the importance of the partnership that you're in. Again, experience shows you can't go into these developing markets and think that you can copy and paste. I sometimes call it the John Wayne approach. You can't come in and think that you know it all from your developed world market, yeah, and bulldoze your way through, irrespective of local practices, customs, and sensitivities. So I think spending a few years learning those was a very good play for companies like Blackstone, investors like Blackstone. They made a number of good partnerships, one of which was with Embassy Group, who's the other sponsor of our REIT. Making sure that there are long-term synergies and a long-term alignment with business objectives, because these partnerships and real estate, I often say, you know, it's a long gestation business. It's not it's not that liquid unless you've got a tradable stock like a REIT. Development takes years to implement, and particularly in India. So if you're getting into a partnership, you need to know that you're getting aligned with somebody who has similar principles to you.
So the launch of the REIT was obviously a massive achievement for Blackstone and Embassy, but also it's a big thing for the market.
Yeah.
How significant is it, and how will it change Indian real estate?
Yeah, I think it is very, very significant. It is one of those milestone changes over these last, call it, three decades. You know, India opened up, liberalized in 1991. In the real estate industry, launching the first REIT would be, you know, one of a half a dozen milestones in that period. Why will it change? The product up until now that's been available to investors has been highly fragmented. Again, the issue of transparency, predictability has not been there. Development of ground up real estate anywhere in the world is a relatively high risk process. It's a long term process. And I would say, frankly, in developing markets like India, that risk is accentuated because of high cost of capital. When you're in a market that you can get significant delays because of regulatory approvals, or simply the efficiency of execution in that market, which is well known, infrastructure challenges. Putting aside the demand and the market cycle, the potential for delay in ground-up development is very significant. So the REIT offers investors something that is much more predictable. The regulations were really well-formed. I think APRIA were involved in that. SEBI came out with regulations. So 80% of our portfolio must be completed and income-producing assets. So that balance, 20%, can be of a development nature, or it can be investment into unlisted real estate securities. But what that means for an investor is that they know that 80% of the portfolio, frankly, is up, running, operational. It's contracted, in our case, with those 160 plus corporate tenants on long-term leases. So you know what you're getting. It's a contracted long-term income stream. The upside piece, perhaps, on the development, for us, it's all what we call on-campus development. So within our large-scale business parks, largest of which is about 120 acres, we have development parcels, which we call down, we bring online as and when we feel that demand is there. And we run the portfolio for the last 5 years at between 93 and 95% occupancy. We'll always have between 500,000 and 1 million square feet of new supply in the pipeline coming through. As we pre-lease that, we might call down a new building. So our exposure and our risk in terms of tenant demand is low, and that's good for the investor. Our knowledge of the ability to deliver the regulatory side is extremely high because it's within that campus development. Issues of land title, which in many parts of Asia can be a challenge and can cause delay and risk in the development cycle. Because we've owned that 120 acres for many years,
yes,
that title is secure. So it provides something that is, it's a good mix of yield plus growth. Rents are growing in some of our markets, low double digits over the last few years. A predictable, solid income stream based off of, it's not a speculative development play. It's not a residential play. It's not a trader developer play. And I think when you look at the performance of REITs all around the world, you can see similar stories. But the big difference that's the case in, I know in India, I'm not sure about the rest of Asia, but there's also the growth component. You know, a lot of REITs internationally in the West, one tends to look at a significant part of their performance is through acquisitions and dispositions. It is that trading piece of it. The REITs in India have the benefit that we've got strong rental growth, consistent rental growth that we're able to, through a number of different levers, plus the development piece and then plus the acquisition piece. So it really changes the environment for Indian investors in real estate. It transforms it, and it will bring significant liquidity into the market, which is a good thing. It allows some of those trader developers, perhaps who are mixed, I call them hybrids, they're doing residential, doing commercial. It perhaps allows them a little bit more liquidity to solve some of the challenges that are out there, particularly on the residential side at the moment. So yeah, a big game changer in my view.
And it's the REIT has already been very successful. So
yep,
clearly the demand for that type of security is out there.
Yep.
Which brings me on to, when do you expect to see the next one? And what's the potential for India REITs? How many might we see in, say, 5 years' time?
Yeah, I think the challenge of delivering on a REIT in any market should not be underestimated. And it was a challenging process to bring this REIT to market, given the fact that it was the first of its kind in India. Our initial set of investors, and we raised about $680 million in a primary offering at the end of first quarter this year. But our you know, real demand came from international investors who know and are familiar with the REIT. There was and there is a significant amount of education that needs to be done at a domestic level, and we're doing that all the time. At a domestic level, both institutionally and with private HNI, ultra HNI investors in India because of that new product side. I think a key tenet for us is to ensure that we perform as predicted. Our IPO document was extremely detailed in terms of the business. It had detailed three-year projections in there. So, you know, we've got our feet to the fire to make sure that we deliver on that. As each quarter goes by and we deliver on those numbers, the credibility at a domestic level will continue to change and transform. We finished our first quarter at the end of June, and our gross numbers were up 19% year on year. Our EBITDA was up 11%. We distributed 417 crores distributions to our unit holders. So that's the first milestone where investors actually get to see the sort of return that what we've projected, we've delivered on, and it's our job as a management team to keep doing that. As long as we do that, REIT will continue to interest the domestic market as well as the international market. Next REITs, there's certainly two or three significant players out there who are looking at and working on that at the moment. I think that's common knowledge, but you know, at the moment we're the only REIT in India. We believe by square footage we're the largest REIT in Asia. You know, there it would be surprising if there would be more than half a dozen similar scale type of offerings even in the next 3 years. So the market, which may be the case across Asia, but certainly in India in the last decade, has really continued to concentrate in fewer, larger scale, more institutional developer owners. I think that's a trend that we're well into. That trend will continue. We'll see multiples of what we've got today in REITs, but I don't believe in the next 3 years there'll be, you know, more than a handful.
So it's going to be steady progress in the shorter term.
Yeah. And of course, you just have to continue to deliver, and you're only as good as your last quarter. The beauty of the product, as I said before, is the medium to long-term nature of the covenants that we've got from those 160 odd tenants generating our annual rentals, and then that gets transformed into the distributions. And we are seeing absolutely no change in the demand side from the office occupier. You know, the scale of the market, people really, it takes us aback when we look and compare at the stats of these markets. Bangalore as one city in the last 5 years absorbed more office space in square footage than Beijing, Shanghai, and Hong Kong combined. Now, the scale of the market is phenomenal. I was just checking on it. In Shanghai, last 5 years, CBRE put out a number as 28 million square feet. Bangalore was 56 million square feet. Now, this calendar year, mid-year, CBRE put out some numbers for Pan India that were approximately 30 million square feet of take up in a half year. JLL is saying 42 million for the full calendar year. So the demand side continues to be there, despite some of the negative sentiment that's out there. And of course, with falling interest rates, that can only improve the position for the market and probably also for a REIT.
Absolutely. Fantastic. That's great. Thanks very much for your
great.
Time, Mike.
Okay.
And good luck with the rest of your first year.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for tuning in to the Apria Leadership Podcast Series. Hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast. We'll be back soon with more. If you like what you heard and would like to give us feedback on future podcast episodes, please contact Sigrid Jalcita. That's SIGRID.ZIALCITA@apria.asia.